The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Empowerment Hour. Lots of positive information to share with you today. And let's begin. First up, for those of you who've been on one of those high-protein diets that are very popular and have been for a long time, first advocated by Dr. Robert Atkins. Before him, there was a liquid protein diet, but that was so dangerous and irresponsible, it was taken off the market. Then along came Dr. Atkins. He sold millions of copies of his book toward the United States and had so many people eating meat and fat and butter and cream and cheeses three times a day. Very little fruits and vegetables, almost no complex carbohydrates, grains and legumes, beans, and people lost some weight. And therefore, he was heralded as the new voice. The trouble is, I was telling him, because he was a friend of mine, Robert, I'm seeing an awful lot of your patients who have kidney problems, liver problems. They're very toxic. They have fatigue. They have edema. You're giving them too much protein. Now, you would have thought, as a bariatric weight specialist, he would have understood this, that the body doesn't store protein. Therefore, like bodybuilders and weightlifters and people on high-protein diets, taking a lot of protein in at any meal doesn't help the body. It hurts the body for a simple reason. Your body should have protein three times a day, and not a lot, 9/10 of a gram per kilogram of body weight. Now, just to give you an average, for most women between the ages of between the weight of, let's say, 115 and 140 pounds, that would be about 40 grams of protein a day. For most men, let's say between 160 and 200 pounds, it'd be about 75 grams a day. A bodybuilder can very easily consume 150 grams in one big protein shake. Sit down to a steak. Just do the math. Let's say that you're eating a 16-ounce steak, and let's say that 40% of that is protein. Well, now at 20.35 grams to an ounce, and let's just say that, 6 ounces of your steak, or even 6 ounces. Let's take 6 ounces. So 6 times 28. And then you see that you're way up there at over 100 and almost 150 grams of protein in one meal. That's a two-day supply in one meal. Well, when protein is overwhelmingly put into the body, it has to be broken down. And there's a process called deamidization. This is where the body breaks down this excess protein, and that creates a byproduct, urea. It also creates ammonium. These are both toxic to the kidneys and liver. So needless to say, it's not surprising that people on high-protein diets have problems with their liver and their kidneys. Here's another thing. This is just from a new report from the Veterans Affairs Puget Sound Healthcare System in Seattle. Protein-rich diet linked to liver cancer. Let me quote this. Diets high in protein and cholesterol are linked with a higher risk of hospitalization or death due to cirrhosis or liver cancer. while diets that are high in complex carbohydrates are associated with a lower risk. That's the latest research. I hate to think of how many Americans, I'm going to guess into the millions over these years, have suffered and died because of the arrogance of this one man. And because we have just been following this kind of program. Let's hope we wake up. A healthy vegan diet extends your life, prevents cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and inflammation. And that's what we advocate. Now, for those mothers who are breastfeeding, good for you. This is the latest study. It showed this mother's milk protects your baby's delicate intestines. This is the latest study, and there are hundreds of studies showing the benefit of breast milk over formula. Here's what it says. Quote from London. Scientists have discovered a wonder molecule in mother's milk that protects and repairs the delicate intestines of newborn babies. Called pancreatic secretory trypsin inhibitor, the ingredient is found at its highest levels in colostrum, the milk produced in the first few days after birth. This molecule is normally found in the pancreas and protects it from being damaged by the digestive system. So that's good news. One more reason why breastfeeding is so important. Widely used cancer drug causes potential deadly holes in your GI tract. There is a current drug out there, very popular, used by the drug industry to help people with cancer. Quote, it inhibits tumor growth by blocking angiogenesis, the formation of new blood vessels. But according to an article just published in the June issue of The Lancet Oncology, cancer patients treated with Avastin, A-V-A-S-T-I-N, in combination with chemotherapy, are at a heightened risk of experiencing a potentially catastrophic side effect. In fact, it's a side effect that could kill them before their cancer does. A gastrointestinal perforation, a hole in the wall of the stomach, the small intestine, or the bowel. According to the National Institutes of Health, gastrointestinal perforations lead to leakage of intestinal contents into the abdominal cavity, causing an inflammation known as peritonitis, and symptoms of this condition may include severe abdominal pain, chills, fever, nausea, and vomiting. So this is one of those situations where the treatment could be worse than the disease. There's also some new research out suggesting that toxic chemicals in our environment, such as Teflon and plastics and formaldehyde, have increasingly invaded our homes, and we use these substances, according to Harvey Karp of the Huffington Post, quote, we think they're harmless, but a rising tide of evidence has turned the spotlight on chemical exposure as a possible poison to our children's developing brains. One group of substances of particular concern is the ubiquitous family of hormone-twisting compounds known as endocrine-disrupting chemicals, or EDCs. These substances are the focus of intense scrutiny because they're found in every home in America. They're increasingly linked to human disease, and our exposure to them has risen in parallel with the surge in autism diagnosis. And they may theoretically affect the developing fetal brain. So be very careful. One more reason to get rid of all of the toxic materials in your home. That's not difficult to do. It may seem difficult. It is not. There is an entire industry of natural greening of every product that you would use. So any product you think you can't find an alternative for, there are multiple duplicated products out there that can take their place. For example, there's now a mattress. It's the same identical quality as one of those Posturepedic mattresses where your body molds right in. It's terrific. And they're made out of bamboo. It's all natural. There's no chemical outgassing. It's really terrific. So that's good. High-fat diet affects physical memory abilities of rats after 9 days. From the University of Cambridge, quote, rats fed a high-fat diet show a stark reduction in their physical endurance and a decline in their cognitive ability after just 9 days, a study at Oxford University has shown. The research, funded by the British Heart Foundation and published in the major scientific journal in England, has shown implications not only for those eating lots of high-fat foods, but also athletes looking for the optimal diet for training and patients with metabolic disorders. Quotes, when we fed rats this diet, the high-fat diet, we showed a surprisingly quick reduction in their physical performance. So they got sick. So high-fat diets, not good for you. And the rates of severe childhood obesity are up sharply, not only in the United States, but also around the world. I'll quote this from Reuters. It says, the rate of severe obesity among U.S. children and teenagers more than tripled over the last 3 decades. So we have more fat and obese children than ever before in our history. But so do kids in other countries as well. Why? They're following the American diet. Lots of soft drinks, lots of fructose, the corn sweetener, lots of fried animal food, lots of sweet refined carbohydrates, donuts, and pizzas, all bad. And one more thing on that, diet can increase your risk of kidney cancer. I'll quote this. This is the newest research, University of Florida, Gainesville, from Reuters. Quote, eating red meat may increase a person's risk of developing the most common type of kidney cancer, while eating vegetables may provide a protective effect, new research in the Journal of the American Dietetic Association shows. So ask yourself, when are you going to give up the meat? When are you going to protect yourself? Now, from our social issues segment of our program, as you have heard if you've been listening, we did an expose of what is called ALEC. A-L-E-C. This is a group that's been around for a while, and this is a group of major industries, all the major industries in America. They get together on a regular basis. They actually meet with legislators, and then they tell the legislators what laws they want to see enacted and what any kind of law they want to see taken away or any restrictions or guidelines that are altered on their behalf. That's one of the reasons that we're having such a tough time informing people the real dangers of our quality of life on global warming, for example. So behind the scenes, this enormously powerful group is literally writing all the legislation. Let me quote this from Jill Richardson. It says, as the United States suffers through catastrophic tornadoes, heat waves, and other climate extremes, no doubt just as a small taste of what the climate crisis will bring in the future, polluting industries and the politicians that serve them want to convince you that excess carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is actually a good thing. Last December, almost like clockwork, Republican legislators and state houses across the nation sounded the alarm about an out-of-control Environmental Protection Agency. What had the EPA suddenly done to earn such criticism? The EPA had dared to take the first baby steps towards regulating greenhouse gas emissions. On January 10th of 2011, Indiana became the first state to pass a resolution urging Congress to prohibit the EPA from regulating greenhouse gas emissions. How? Defund the EPA if necessary, and to impose a 2-year moratorium on any new air quality regulations, and urge the federal government to complete a study identifying all planned regulatory activity by the EPA and its impact on the economy and jobs and American economic competitiveness. So, just so you know, the ALEC's campaign against any regulation of greenhouse gases began long ago when the U.S. was in the midst of debating the Kyoto Protocol, an international effort to rein in greenhouse gas emissions to control the climate crisis. And it just has enormous power. You've got ExxonMobil, Peabody Energy, Koch Industries. These are the people who are part of this ALEC group. And, of course, they have the power to tell your legislator exactly what they want, irrespective of what we, the public, need. From our social issues segment of our program, this comes from David DeGraw, from daviddegraw.org. Quote, he talks about what a collapsing Ponzi scheme looks like. The housing market headed off a cliff as a shocking 10.8 million American homes are at risk of defaulting. Let me quote this. You might want to sit down for this one. As bad as the housing crisis has been over the past 3 years, it has only been a warm-up to what we have headed our way. Lori Goodman from Amherst Securities has been tracking the housing market as well as anyone. She just presented her latest findings at the American Enterprise Institute, and it's a horrific forecast, to say the least. As she put it, quote, 10.8 million American homes are at risk of default over the next 6 years. Even if we try to be extremely conservative, we can't get the number below 8.7 million homes. With defaults already piling up, the shadow inventory of homes has been growing rapidly. And given this new data, the number is going to skyrocket. And what it means is that you're going to have 2 million homes in 2009. You're going to have 3.3 million homes in 2010. And now you're going to have the homes this year. And now you got on top of that 9 million more homes. Well, where are these homes supposed to be sold? We don't have people to buy them. And that means that it's going to absolutely devastate the existing market. So I predict now that instead of a 5 to 20% reduction in real estate value over the next 2 years, I'm now predicting between 20 and 50%. If all these homes are foreclosed on, we're going to lose probably 80% of the American homes out there, because they're all mortgaged, and most are mortgaged, and the mortgage should be underwater. So that is bad. One other thing on the social front, according to Christina Luisa from Natural News, theft is on the rise in a worsening economy. Let me quote this. It is not strange to hear about cars, jewelry, or money being stolen. These days, desperate thieves are choosing bizarre targets: copper wires, air conditioning units, storm drain covers, grapes, ambulances, painkillers, and even bees. These petty thievery of the agricultural goods and odd supplies is the new norm in a rapidly worsening economy where unemployment is rampant. The downturn in the economy and record unemployment numbers have created a heightened sense of desperation, which subsequently is leading to a rapid increase in crime levels all over the country. Air conditioning units in churches have literally been cut loose from their hookups in Houston, Philadelphia, and other cities and small towns. More than 100 storm drain covers have been stolen in Sacramento in recent weeks. Jackson, Missouri police are investigating an onslaught of recent robberies targeting various delivery drivers. Farm felons are becoming more creative in California, where robbery of everything from grapes and avocados to beehives has been reported in recent times. According to the New York Times article, in the Central Valley, which is the agricultural hub of the state, high unemployment, foreclosures, and methamphetamine abuse have made criminals more desperate, resulting in the regular disappearance of diesel fuel, hardware tools, and truck batteries. In fact, the entire state of California is also dealing with a huge rise in copper theft. According to the New York Times, this is a perpetual problem made worse due to the metal's skyrocketing price. Robbers often cut copper wires running between outdoor wells and their power boxes, or the copper wires attached to air conditioning units. These copper wires cost a few thousand dollars each to replace and can be sold for small, but money for the drug addicts. And copper is not the only metal that's out there being stolen. Iron can also be pawned off for a decent amount of cash, cash that could be used for groceries, gas, or the cost of other basic needs. Texas and Florida are also seeing increases in agricultural crime. The increasing incidence of rural theft and theft in general is more proof of the negative impacts of our country's troublesome economic state, rampant unemployment, and other burdens. And one example would be the Obamacare overhaul, which is meant to provide our country with security, but instead is resulting in skyrocketing insurance costs and physicians leaving the field, making it harder to afford and find proper medical care. According to the Drug Enforcement Agency, armed robberies at pharmacies have risen by 81%. And the main target for these robberies is oxycodone, the painkillers. A single pill can go for $80. So a moderate-sized robbery could net $40,000 profit. Now, if you remember, it was last year when I was out and filming my new documentary on Poverty Inc. that I explained that we don't see it in New York City. We don't see it in Bel Air and Rodeo Drive. There's a lot of places we just don't see any of this. But once you get into middle America, once you start going out into the suburbs, you start seeing how desperate people are. In fact, I'll tell you how desperate they are. When driving from Phoenix up to Flagstaff, which is the high end of the state in Arizona, and passing through Sedona, I was asking the driver, how bad is it here? And he said over 50% of the homes are underwater, meaning they've lost all their equity in their home. Crime is rampant. People are afraid to go away on a vacation because they'll have their home broken into. These are just regular, nice suburban homes. This is not in any ghetto area where there would be a higher incidence of crime. The crime is now in the suburbs. There is no safe place. And he said that that the desert now is so bad that what is the point of being there? This is a man who was giving me a ride, and he said, when I first came out here, I came out here because my wife had a breathing problem, and we were told that Arizona had nice dry weather. Yeah, that's true. But now it's got so much dust. It's everywhere, as you've seen from these gigantic dust storms. One was over a mile high and 100 miles long, and every single inch of everyone's home was just filled with dust because the dust goes through the air conditioning system. The dust goes through every window. The dust is everywhere, and it's not a once-in-a-lifetime situation. It's happened 3 times in 1 month. But he said the bad thing is, now there's so many people who would never have been suspected or thought to be engaged in criminal activity in the past who now are so desperate that they're stealing food, they're stealing tires to sell them off cars, they're stealing anything they can steal. So here's my question. And we're going to take a break. Right now in the United States, we have approximately, and I'll just break down the numbers so you get an idea, just because most people are not aware of how it works. We have about 8 million millionaires. Now that means set aside their house, just in cash, they have at least $1 million. Then we have approximately 40 million Americans who you would consider upper middle class. These tend to be older. Many are retired. They've lived relatively conservatively financially. They own their own homes more often than not. A great many of them are living in retirement villages, or what we would call gated community. And for all intents and purposes, they're out of the political spectrum. You will see some of them at Tea Party rallies. You will see them within given communities. They tend to be congregating in given communities, including, by the way, Flagstaff and around some of the gated communities in Phoenix, which now you can't enjoy. It's too hot. It's brutally hot. And it's so devastating there. And now with the crime, crime is everywhere. Then you have your professional class. And again, we have about 15 million professional class. We have over 6 million scientists alone. But then you have all your PhDs, your professors, your academics, your accountants. You have people who are have their own businesses who are successful. So you have quite a few in the professional class, about 15 million. Then you have your all right working class. People are still making a living, and they're not rich, but they're not poor. They're not on food stamps. They're not at risk of losing their home for non-payment of mortgage, though the value of their property is generally at or below what they'll ever get any value out of it. And there you're dealing with somewhere in the neighborhood of about 60 million Americans. Now, you add that up, you're at around, you're at almost around 125 million, approximately 125 million Americans. We have 310, approximately, million Americans in the United States now. So what that leaves you with about 185 million Americans. That's an awful lot of people who are poor or the working poor. And the working poor are virtually not counted by anyone, anywhere, nor are their needs met. Now, these are the people who do have jobs, but frequently two jobs, or everyone in a family works. So they are able to make food, but they're not able to pay their bills. They're behind on everything. They're kiting their, what's called, kiting their credit cards, meaning they might have 10 credit cards that when a bill comes in, they pay that bill with another credit card. And then they pay that bill with another credit card. So there's always these amounts up in the air. That's who I'm mainly speaking to. I've spoken with all groups. I've gone into gated communities and asked them, how do you feel about this? No one's happy about what's going on, but that doesn't mean they're proactive in wanting to address it. The majority of the people are still the belief that the Democrats and Republicans will get us out of this, that somehow if we cut enough spending, or on the one hand, or if we spend enough with entitlement programs, we'll get ourselves out of this. What are your thoughts, please? This is our issue. What do you believe we should do to rebalance our country, to help these 185 million Americans who are really struggling, who you never see on television? You don't have any rallies for them. There's no protests on their behalf. And in that 185 million, you've got a lot of senior citizens. You've got a lot of people who feel abandoned and trapped. Trapped by circumstances. They're frequently too old or do not have the resources to get acknowledged. They're just scraping by. And you have a lot of children in here. 17 million of these 185 million are children going to bed hungry. I see no politicians going to bed hungry. I see no one on television going to bed hungry. I see no funds being put aside. I see no rallies. I see no benefits for the hungry children. What does that tell us about us as a society, that we can't even have an honest look at 17 million children? Well, put it in another way. That's more people than live in all of New York City and the five boroughs. So if you took every hungry child and you removed all the New Yorkers from New York City and the total five boroughs, you would still have more children than there is place for them. That's how bad it is. Any legislation to help them? No. Any efforts? No. Is it going to get better? Only worse. Now, how many of those are teenagers, and how many of those teenagers are going to start joining gangs because it's the only way they feel that they can survive? We currently have 2 million gang members. It's going to go to 5 million. Then watch the problems. Your thoughts, please. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment with your comments.
Who sell out in the stores? You tell me who flop. Who cop the blue drop? Who jewels drop? Who most people don't get down to the blue drop? The same old pimp. Mace, you know ain't nothing changed but my limp. Can't stop till I see my name on a blimp. Guarantee me and sell for the love of luck. You don't believe in Harlem World? Double up. We don't play around. It's a bet laid down. They didn't know me 91. Bet they know me now. I'm the young Harlem with the goldie sound. Can't no team. kid B, hold me down, cooler, school me to the game, now I know my duty, stay humble, stay low, blow like Woody, true pimp, spin no dough on the booty.
I'm Gary Knoll. I want to welcome those people in 190 countries around the world who are tuned in now. I'm in our studio in New York City, back from my recent filming for 3.5 weeks. We're going to take your calls now. My guest, Dan Olmstead, a new look at the Dr. Wakefield scandal in light of the illegal activities in journalism conducted by the Murdoch media empire in the UK, and a review of where the current vaccine autism debate stands in the United States. Dan Olmstead is an investigative reporter who is a former senior editor for UPS, United Press International, and a founding member of the USA Today team. We'll be talking with him. He is also one of the best investigative journalists in the world. The Columbia Journalism Review has called his site some of the best in contributions to the autism debate. Let's say hello to Paul from Staten Island. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Gary.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is, and I think you mentioned before, illusion. I think Hollywood and Walt Disney has created a certain illusion of grandeur. And until we get past the clouded illusions of the mind, we're never going to get past the Democrat-Republican thing and move on to what we really need to challenge.
I appreciate your insight. Thank you, Paul. Phil from Long Island, your turn. Phil, speak up, please. You're on the air.
Gary?
Yes.
Oh, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, great. Yeah, what I really wanted to talk about is the reason for the fact that we have no jobs now, and that's basically because of these rigged trade agreements. And number two, the unbelievable number of jobs that were outsourced. And during the last couple of weeks, you haven't heard, they're talking about the deficit, but you haven't heard one person on the news talk about the reason why we have no jobs. It's as if the deficit, once they fix the deficit, it's going to bring jobs back. And that's a total illusion.
I absolutely agree with you, Phil. Phil, if you were listening to my radio show when Clinton was buying the votes to pass NAFTA and have us join the World Health Organization, I said, where do you think this is going? This is going to go where manufacturers are going to look into a basic issue and say, why should I pay you $30 an hour plus health benefits when I can outsource your job to China or India or Haiti for a dollar an hour or less? And that's exactly what happened. In fact, I did a broadcast 7 years ago that showed from 1975 through 2005, we outsourced or downsized 28 million jobs. 28 million. There was not a single article in any newspaper or magazine in the United States on this phenomena. And it's accelerating. It's not getting better. It's getting worse because the corporate takeover of the United States, which is happening now, and it was sanctioned and applauded by the Supreme Court through Citizens United, and now through the dirty tricks groups like the ALEC groups meeting with all the state legislatures. This is how it's working. It's not profitable to manufacture anything in the United States from their perspective. Therefore, make the jobs available elsewhere and forget the American worker. You're absolutely correct. But then again, look at how corrupt the unions have been by supporting the Democrat presidential nominations with the assumption that the Democrats in Congress would turn this around, and they haven't. They've absolutely betrayed the unions completely. And it's unfortunate the rank and file don't throw the bastards who run these unions out. You know, get rid of the Jimmy Hoffas. They're not your friend. They're not there to protect you. I'm pro-union. I'm absolutely, adamantly against the heads of these unions until I see them marching, calling for general strikes, calling for boycotts, and risking political isolation instead of getting invited over to the White House for a special luncheon. Thanks for your call, Phil. Daryl from New Jersey, your turn. Daryl, speak up, please. Daryl? George. Darren from New Jersey. Darren, you're on. Well, we have a lot of people calling. A few are on the line. We'll try one more here. Cypro from Queens.
You?
Good.
All right. I just wanted to say that I'm actually a history teacher in Queens, New York. I teach global studies, and I just heard the breakdown of the social classes in our country. And first of all, that was a great job, and it's actually very depressing that 180 million of us are working poor. I'm actually working on my second job right now for my father's company, so I can understand that working conditions in our country are pretty bad. But it sounds like there has to be something done. We need some type of leader to get these 180 million strong together, have some type of political revolution. I know it sounds cliche. I know we've seen the French, the Chinese, the Russians, the Cubans. Everyone's gotten together. I'm not saying overthrowing the government, but something pretty close to it. And I know it's not culturally American to start some kind of revolution, but you said, what can we do? And, I mean, that's the best idea I can have.
First of all, did I miss something in the 1700s when a group of individuals got together and decided that they no longer wanted to be slaves to the nobility of Europe?
That's right.
Okay. No, revolution is the very basis of all of a mark of our republic. And let us not forget, we have never been, nor ever assumed to be, a democracy. Historically, as a historian, you know that we are a republic. We're just not acting like a republic.
We're not. You're 100% right.
And also, we were never meant to be a corporate-led fascist regime. Fascism is nothing more than corporate control of the body politic for the interests of those who are powerful enough to control that.
Absolutely. But again, how do we convey this message to the 180
It's too early.
What people that probably have an education, you know, how can they understand to get together? Like you said, overthrow the union leaders. I just heard that.
Yes.
You know, in England during the Industrial Revolution, that's how they got their parliament intact. They got the unions to come together to vote people into parliament. I mean, how can we get people to organize the workers? I'm not talking about a communist revolution.
I understand what you're saying. What we have to do is we have to go through three stages, I believe. First is to enlighten ourselves that the people in power now are the people who should not be governing. They are incapable of governing, and I think we are all aware of that. Secondly, to start bringing people forward who actually come from a populist perspective, who are not the elitist. In other words, bring people who every day have to get up and see the world for what it is, instead of the multimillionaires who go to Washington or the jurists who go to Washington and all are immediately co-opted by the special interest groups who got there because of the special interest groups. So let's get it to where we have absolute total change in the election laws. How do we do that? By, in every state, beginning the process of having referendum where no private money can go into any campaign. It must all be supported on a 3-month voting cycle only, where every person who wishes to run for an office registers and then fills out a series of questions that would be asked of all people, so we the people can see what are your positions on a wide range of issues. We then have an opportunity to see these. Then by lottery, people have a chance to come forward and debate their issues with others, so everybody gets a chance. No one's excluded. Then through a 2-step process, we eliminate those down, and an initial election and then a final election. This way, a school teacher, a cab driver, a homemaker, all have a chance of serving the public. Then have single term, 3 years, no longer for any office. And take away all lobbying, no lobbying. Make it a crime to lobby. Get rid of the special interest groups. And then have community oversight. Have an independent group in every state that oversees the process of legislation. And that way, at least we can clean up the system. Otherwise, we have to wait for the progressives to come together, to work together, who were at one time independent, and before that they were left or right, and see what we need for a good and healthy future. It'll take 1 to 2 years from now. Here's the bad news. The bad news is that America has become comfortable in its indifference. And unlike the 100 million who arose in the Middle East, including the 22 Arab nations, both the Persians and the Arabs. The Persians, for example, in Iran, the students and the intellects, against the Ayatollahs and the theocracy. We do not have a theocracy, and people can at least have bread. In those countries, people went to the streets because they didn't have breads. So we are not yet hurt badly enough, and this is a very bad notion to think about, but we're not at the level of pain to where there's no help and only pain. So until that happens, you will not see those people, the 185, willing to do something proactive. When that happens, the progressives, the new leaders, who are not basing anything upon power, money, ego, will come forward. There are multiple, there are thousands and thousands of these individuals in our society. They have no position of power now. They are never invited on any forum to debate any issue, ever. And do not confuse those who you see on Rachel Maddow or Keith Urban. Those are not progressives. They are liberals. They are not progressives. They are on a spectrum of liberal belief. And the same is true on the conservative side. You have a lot of progressive minds within the conservative belief, but you're not seeing them. So those are off the table. Only when they are allowed a forum, and we demand that forum, will you start to see change. But you're going to have to go through another election cycle. You're going to have another false presidency. You're going to have another series of take more jobs away, give more to the wealthy. When that happens, then we will say we want change now, because we will then be hurting. Remember, our pain, as bad as it is, the suffering I see that I do throughout this country, does not begin to compare the suffering you have in Somalia, the suffering you have in other countries. It is not the same suffering. That is not to diminish its impact, but it's to say that when you start off with so much more, and then you still have some layers of protection before you hit rock bottom, we're going to have to hit rock bottom before there's a universal cry to throw the bums out and start from scratch with a whole new concept of responsibility in government. Thank you very much. George, last call from Connecticut, your turn.
I happen to be in the foreclosure court by accident because I had a case assigned to a particular judge. It had nothing to do with foreclosure, but I was just miserable to watch some of these people go up there. They couldn't even afford legal representation, and when they did, it was usually inadequate. And the few that did see that basically the banks didn't even have a leg to stand on. Most people don't realize that most of these guys can't even find the deed. So that if they can't find the deed or the mortgage, I mean, they can't really prove that they're actually the owners because they split these things up in a million pieces. And one other thing most people don't realize, this was a famous case. Unfortunately, I wasn't prepared for you talking on this subject, otherwise I would have brought it up. It was out in, I think it was Wisconsin, this man basically said that the court had, the bank had no right to foreclose on his home because they never put up collateral. Under United States law, basically, you have to have collateral. And since they do fractional banking, that means they had to actually have actual collateral in the bank for every dollar they lent out, which they don't under the system. I'd be loved to look up the case law, so maybe I can pass it on to you. Maybe you can say it over the air. Maybe some people can save their homes under that case.
I'm familiar with that particular case, and the person won the case. That's
right.
What was important. The judge sided with the person. Here's the issue, and this is a larger issue. First, let's stop buying homes because the American dream is to have a prosperous, healthy, happy life, not to own a piece of real estate. So the people who wanted us to believe that our dream is commensurate and concomitant with their economic gain, they created this illusion. Happiness is having quality time and the freedom to express yourself with those that you care about, including the society that you're a part of. That's no longer what we're living for. We're living for material gain because we've been conditioned to believe that that is our largest, that's the template upon which all of our ideals should be based, consumerism. Secondly, we also have to ask ourselves, why would we not demand of our Congress and the President of the United States by executive order, if you gave $16 trillion, according to Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont, $16 trillion with zero interest to major corporations and banks throughout the United States and the rest of the world, and not a penny, to help an American consumer on Main Street or small business person? Why can't you stop the foreclosures, which they could? The President of the United States, I've already spoke, constitutional lawyers could do that. Congress could do that. They've chosen not to do that. And this was still when the Democrats controlled both the House and the Senate when this debacle started. So you can't blame one party against the other. That is the game that they engage in. Thirdly, why would a person who's had their home foreclosed on continue to bank with the very bank that is taking away their home, who got bailed out and they're not? That, to me, shows that we're not paying attention to the basics in our society. Until we do so, then we are suffering from the Stockholm Syndrome on a massive scale. We're living a delusional life. George, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. I'm Gary Noll. We have our guest standing by. We're going to run a little over with my guest today, which is fine. I want to get the full interview in, which we will. For those of you listening on terrestrial stations, at the end of this segment, you can continue to listen for a few minutes on Progressive Radio Network, but we will be going with Dan Olmstead right through. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Noll. Back in our studio in New York City, Elizabeth, we're on a tight schedule today. So what I'd like to do is we'll take on the issues that you have there. And I'm assuming I see a whole bunch of papers in front of you. You have a lot in front of you.
Yes. Good to see you back in the city, Gary, by the way. Sorry you haven't had a chance to enjoy the beach in Miami. You were there by for only an hour, but then you had to drive up to Georgia for a very important interview.
Well, we got a lot of good stuff on film. Yes. What I'm going to do is this. Hold your thoughts till Monday.
Okay.
All right? And also tomorrow we're filming down in the farmer's market, and we could use some volunteer drivers to help take our crew down from here at our office. If anybody has a car and would like to volunteer driving us tomorrow to film, give Elizabeth a call. What that number is?
The number is 646-926-5428. 646-926-5428.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Now, I'd already given Dan Olmstead's background earlier in the show, so let's just say hello to Dan now. Nice to have you with us today, Dan.
Thank you, Gary. Good to be here.
Dan, with the recent controversy over illegal eavesdropping and obtaining information through deception by the Rupert Murdoch media empire, we are faced with an important issue, and this is the questionable integrity of the Sunday Times in the UK, which is owned by the Murdoch News Corporation and managed by the Sun James. Now, this is the publication widely read throughout the UK and highly respected that ultimately contributed to the discrediting of Andrew Wakefield's and his colleagues at the Royal Free Hospital on a relationship to measles and autism. And this also raises the alarm about how deeply Rupert, his earlier wife, and son James are involved in the pharmaceutical cartel, particularly the vaccine industry. And so begin by sharing with us the Sunday Times allowance of deception and to acquire newsworthy information, since it was the Sunday Times journalist Brian Deer who falsified his identity to gain access to parents of autistic children in the Lancet study and apparently had confidential health records of the children that he could only have acquired illegally, in my opinion. In fact, it was this same Brian Deer whose word became the entire foundation for the trials to discredit and defraud the team, and specifically Mr. Wakefield, Dr. Wakefield. Now, in my debate with Brian Deer, I asked him twice, how did he get the patient's records, since it's illegal to obtain patient records without the patient's consent, and yet he had specific patient records. He did not answer that. So could you give us your insight on this, please?
Yes. Just to set the stage a teeny bit more, what happened was that Brian Deere has written for, I think, 7 years now about this study that Dr. Wakefield led that was published in The Lancet in 1998 that found this connection between bowel disease and regressive autism, and also noted that some of the parents believed that it had been triggered by the MMR shot or that it had occurred right after that. And Deere wrote a piece for the Sunday Times of London in 2009 that basically said that Dr. Wakefield had fixed data in this study to create the false impression that there was a link to the MMR shot. And then Deere took a lot of that information and a little bit more, and the British Medical Journal published it in January of this year, which then put the imprimatur of the British Medical Association in a peer-reviewed journal on the idea that Dr. Wakefield had committed fraud and that there was no question about it and that he alone was guilty and that it was not just flawed science, it was fraud. And so what happened was that that seemed to be kind of case closed until just a few weeks ago, as we all know, Rupert Murdoch's media empire, which in Britain includes the Sunday Times, came under tremendous criticism for what is obviously some terrible journalistic misdeeds, including bribing police officers, obtaining private medical records, and other things. Now, it's important to say that in the case of Brian Deere and the Sunday Times, we don't have any specific information on that. But what we do have is, and we've known this for a while, but I think it was important to restate it again, is that Brian Deere used a false identity to gain interviews with at least some of the parents in this Lancet study. How he got those medical records, I don't know. I think that it will come out, and you know, we're on the case. You in January were one of the first people to really take this seriously. This issue of, you know, is there really a case of fraud here? What is the basis for this? And you interviewed some of the parents, and you talked to Dr. Wakefield and Brian Deere. And so, you know, I'm sort of picking that up now. I spent a few weeks over in England, and I've been out to California. I've talked to most of the parents in this study, and I'm convinced that the case for fraud by Dr. Wakefield is non-existent, frankly. And I think that the question of what was done to get this information and this story circulating is something that we're gonna find out.
I also did not have straight answers from Brian Deere when I asked about the association of a pharmaceutical front group that was that it had Rupert Murdoch's son sitting as a participant in, and also Rupert Murdoch's son sitting on the board of the very vaccine maker that could have been challenged on this. I saw too many coincidences. Here's Rupert Murdoch's son, who runs the paper for all intents and purposes, sitting on a board of a pharmaceutical company who's making the vaccine that's in question here, the MMR vaccine. Here's also Brian Deere collaborating with a industry front group, a vaccine industry front group, to nail Dr. Wakefield. Now, I examined every piece of evidence in this entire episode. I found no proof whatsoever. And Wakefield, I don't know personally. I'm looking for the truth. I found nothing that shows that Wakefield was a fraud. And I'm very concerned that the British Medical Journal had a gross lapse, as did The Lancet, in their judgment, and I believe that here is a case where political pressure from very powerful voices within the medical establishment, within the parliament, within the hierarchy of England, got on the phone and backroomed this to throw Wakefield under the bus, destroy his reputation, and Brian Deere come out looking like he's a, you know, a modern day hero for exposing this fraud. And so now I believe that now we have a chance with this scandal to see the truth about the British Medical Journal, the truth about The Lancet, and its subsequent, it originally published the article and originally stood behind Wakefield, but later didn't, just to show you how dirty British politics is.
Well, that's right. And, of course, one of the key charges against Dr. Wakefield over the years has been this allegation that he had a conflict of interest, which actually I don't think he did, but it was basically that a legal firm had paid him to do some research on a separate study involving measles and regressive illness and bowel disease. And so the irony, of course, now is that James Murdoch is a director of GlaxoSmithKline, which is the biggest drug company involved in the MMR in England, and that there was this firm called Medico Legal Investigations that had at least some role early on in advising or vice versa Brian Deere. It's all very cozy and chummy, and it's, in a sense it wouldn't even matter, except that there's the evidence that this was a fraud, by Dr. Wakefield is so thin that you have to wonder, why would they even make this case, and then why would the British Medical Journal pick it up, and why would the mainstream media treat it as proven fact? And, you hear so much now about how this link between vaccines and autism has been discredited because the doctor who first proposed it, was shown to be a fraud. That is absolutely not true. It does not convey the complete picture and ignores the fact that thousands of parents ever since, sadly, have told the same story. And it's a true story that their child was vaccinated usually with the MMR, but sometimes with other vaccines or combinations, and, pretty quickly in some cases descended into tremendous developmental nightmare of autism and regression, and also ended up quite ill with this very strange set of bowel problems. So this story is not over, Gary, as you know, and I'm hoping that what's happened with Murdoch and the sort of the naming and shaming of some of these folks in England is going to allow the truth to come out. And we're certainly working hard on it. And I know you are too.
Well, there's one last point here I'd like to address before we sign off. For 20 years, I've been fighting on behalf of about 700,000 GIs from the first and second Gulf conflict who claim that their Gulf War syndrome, actual physical illnesses, we're not talking about post-traumatic stress disorder now, we're talking about physical illnesses, rare and exotic ones, were due to what they were exposed to, whether it was the vaccines, which were experimental, like botulism, anthrax, and squalene that ended up in their blood that shouldn't have been there, and also other biological agents they were exposed to. Now we just had to determine, and the governments, all of our government agencies, including the White House twice, has said there is no such thing as Gulf War syndrome. It's all in their mind. Well, I've worked with these people. I've seen that it's not in their mind, as has Jay Rockefeller, as have other people, former Senator Dodd from Connecticut, and we know the truth. The trouble is, there's one voice. It doesn't exist, and anyone who says it does then is marginalized. Now we have a new report that they can't sweep under the rug, that they have disallowed hundreds of thousands of vets who have real physical wounds because they had a pre-existing a personality disorder.
Right.
And now that is so insane. And then when it came out, why did you say that these people who had gunshot wounds in the battlefield and now are not going to be helped or given any help at all? Why? Well, it was because it would be $14 billion. Now take that one step further. Look at what we in our own government have done to dishonor the soldiers, whether you believe or don't believe in the war, and I don't, but for those who you do, I understand. But we all should respect the fact that these are men and women putting their lives on the line, and we should follow through and give them all that we can. Now go to England. What would be the motive for destroying Wakefield and his colleagues? Well, how about the idea that if it was shown that the MMR vaccine was damaging people, causing autism, the damages for lifetime treatment could exceed $1 trillion? And based upon how many cases and how many injuries and how many other people would be suing, and even under their program there, it would be devastating financially. And the company that did it, they would be discredited out of business.
so and or held culpable because they would have known this and would have covered it up. So now we've got, in my opinion, based upon my investigation, we have motive for covering it up. Now the means and ways. Now we see that Murdoch, sitting on the board as a director, had the means to protect that industry. And though this part is not yet known or proven, but we know how down and dirty Murdoch's organization played. We know how they broken the law. And could they have done the same thing against Wakefield by using confidential information? And that is still to be seen. But now the picture is getting clearer. So we are not falling back on this. We have stood strong on this. And Dan, I'm glad to see you're involved because you're a reporter of outstanding reputation. I know, as others, you will look for the truth and bring it to our attention.
That's the goal, Gary, and let's keep at it, and more power to you.
Okay, Dan Olmstead is on the line. He is, along with colleague Mark Blaxel, is the Age of Autism, Mercury Medicine and Man-Made Epidemic. It's the most thorough book to date to trace the history of autism vaccine debate. And he has an outstanding background as one of the founding staff members of USA Today, and an investigative reporter, senior editor for United Press International. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen. Look forward to sharing more. Stay tuned for the Danny Schechter Show. In just a moment, coming right up here on the most listened to radio network in the world for progressive minds. And Google said 91 million people went to progressive radio to get their insights and information. Danny Schechter, one of those people who opens minds and inspires deeper thought in just 60 seconds.
The Gary Nall Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.